Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing African fighters in Russia, in the Russia-Ukraine war. I'm joined by a very special guest, Jan Ovoy. Jan is the deputy head at the Conrad Adenauer Stiftung Foundation in the Kenyan office. Jan, it's a pleasure to have you join me today.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having me. I'm very honored to be here on the podcast.
Brilliant, brilliant. So we've seen in recent times, there's been in the news, I think it's the two-year war between Russia and Ukraine. We've started seeing in the past, what we saw was the machinery Wagner Group, known as African Corps, going to fight in Africa, but we're now seeing African fighters coming to fight in the Russia-Ukraine war. Can you explain these dynamics? What is the scope of this situation?
Yeah, so I think what we are seeing recently is more and more news reports, more and more investigative journalism uncovering this topic and showing the scale of it. And from what we see, it definitely increased. And what you say, in the past, we see maybe the Wagner Group coming to Africa. Now we see Africans coming to Russia to fight there. Mm-hmm. And I think it has a lot to do with the situation that Russia is in this war. As you know, Russia calls this a special military operation. This is not a war in the terms they are using. And they have been struggling to reach their strategic goals, or even failed to reach their strategic goals, and now stuck in a stalemate with Ukraine now for the fifth year just started, just had the last anniversary yesterday. So they are stuck in this war and the casualties are mounting. They have trouble mobilizing enough people in their own country to volunteer to fight in Ukraine. And that's why Russia is seeking people outside of their borders to find new fighters to fight in their war. Just to maybe give a little bit of context and a bit of a perspective. So far, we have definitely, with names, IDs, and those things confirmed, over 200,000 people on the Russian side who have been killed in the war, soldiers. With casualties, of course, much higher, over 1 million already in the course of the war. Last year, 2025, was the year with the highest rate of casualties for the Russian army in Ukraine. And this just shows you how high amounts of manpower are needed for Russia to keep up their abysmal slow progress they are making in Ukraine. There have been no major strategic or tactical victories for Russia for a long time. They right now occupy less territory than they have occupied in March 2022, just after they started this war. We see Russia increasingly desperate for manpower. We see that what they have done in their own country ceases to work. The prisons are empty. They've recruited all the prisoners they can. They've recruited all the patriots who joined voluntarily. They have mobilized one time, and as a result, many young Russians fled the country to avoid the draft. Sources of manpower are ending, and it's increasingly difficult for Russia to mobilize their own people to fight this war. Casualties per month amount to approximately 30,000 people on the Russian side. Recruitment 2024 was a bit higher. They managed to recruit more than 30,000 people, a little bit more than their casualty rate, so they could bolster up their army. Recently, the casualties increased and the recruitment gets more and more difficult. So that just explains how we now, and especially from mid last year, see more and more pressure and more drive from the Russian side to try to recruit people overseas.
So if you look at so when those wars started, before I come to the scale and to the character of the African fighters in there, let's talk about Africa itself, Africa's position. So Africans usually have in this, I think, a non-aligned position in this fight. So if you look at that, would we say is the number of African fighters now fighting, are they skewed towards Russia? Do you have any number fighting on the Ukrainian side?
So I don't have official numbers how many are on the Ukrainian side, and we also don't have official numbers how many are fighting on the Russian side. I think it's a very difficult assessment to make. Last year, we heard from the Ukrainian Foreign Ministry that they identified about 1,400 fighters fighting on the Russian side. But those were ones who were definitively identified. So the real number would be higher than that. We heard reports from Kenya where they estimated about 200 fighters. Now, most recently, a parliamentary report presented from the National Intelligence Service quoted 1,000 Kenyans alone, Kenyans, not Africans altogether, just Kenyans fighting in this war. So we really don't know how many people exactly are there fighting on the Russian side, but it could be a higher five-digit number for sure. Altogether, it's estimated at about 20,000 foreign fighters in the war currently. So it's quite a high number. And countries from Africa definitely have quite the big part in that.
Why you're based in Kenya? Why are fighters in Kenya? Why do you have more recruits from Kenya compared to other African countries?
I think this
from
this
the now, from all we know so far.
Yeah, from what we know so far, of course, has a lot to do with the incentives to investigate those topics. In many countries, maybe there is not a big incentive by the government, by the intelligence services to either investigate or then publish those numbers. I think in Kenya, we are in a unique position compared to most other countries on the continent. Kenya took the outbreak of the war more positive position towards Ukraine and condemned the invasion, and since then also has been diplomatically much closer to Ukraine and its allies than many other countries on the continent. So I think we are in a more unique position to see those numbers here. I wouldn't dare to say which country is the most involved and why we don't see numbers from here and there. Other countries where higher numbers are reported already, but again, no definitive answers, would be Egypt, would be Cameroon, would be Central African Republic. So those countries seem to have a lot of more fighters there that are known. But that doesn't mean that maybe other countries are not more prominent. We just don't know about it yet.
Very, very interesting. I've seen, so I was just reading Ramaphosa, you know, being able to negotiate the release of 11 South Africans, I think from 17, but business to negotiate 11 release of, you know, through diplomatic channel with Putin. And I was going to say that and talk about South Africa's position in foreign wars, in particularly the Israel-Palestine conflict, or Israel, South Africa has always maintained that position. But how do you combine, see that in parallel to this Russia-Ukraine war, in parallel to the strong stance that South Africa has maintained in the, but they've not sent foreign fighters or South African fighters involved, but they've also been involved in other ways. So I guess the question is, South Africans that are involved in this, are they involved from a place of ideology? Or is it the same incentives, economic incentives that other people have cited that's likely driven them to fighting for Russia?
I think the specific case now with those 17 people you were talking about, I think this can also be summed up under economic incentives. Same with most people from the continent joining the Russian army, either voluntarily or through coercion. It's usually economic incentives. Even though countries maybe like South Africa and also others on the continent have historically good and deep connections with Russia, with Moscow, Soviet Union before that, there doesn't seem to be strong ideological reasons for those people to go there. It's really about economic situation in their home countries, not being able to sustain their family, not being able to find a well-paying job or a job at all, and then being lured by offers of either scholarships, studying in Russia, working in Russia as a skilled worker, something like that, and then being coerced in Russia or tricked into joining the military. Many already know what they will serve in some sort of security area, but they don't know that they will go to the military to fight on the front lines. So I think it's mainly economic reasons for them to go.
Okay. We'll come back to the economic reasons. But again, there have been reports that the Russian-Ukraine war has also become some sort of geopolitical competition, or to become to extend a sphere of influence to Africa. So now we're seeing recruits, but we've also seen a case of Russia or Ukraine supporting the war, either side of the faction in Sudan. We've had cases of them also being involved in the Sahel, trying to... So do you see all of that playing out? Because we might be looking at recruitment, but do we see a bigger issue, a bigger problem beyond even just recruiting? Are we seeing some sort of proxy war?
I think you have made some of the examples, and we have seen some of those involvements in the last years, right? We have seen Ukrainians and Russians fighting in Sudan against each other as part of RSF and the Sudanese army. So we have seen that. But I think in general, what can be said is that the Russian influence in Africa has not gotten much stronger since the beginning of the war, or in the world generally. I think it's the war already is a strategic loss for Russia. They have not achieved their war goals in Ukraine. And throughout the last 4 years, they have lost many of their allies in Syria, a much weakened Iran currently. And so I don't think it's going very well for Russia. Now they have those manpower shortages. They have less capacity to engage and support regimes in Africa that would be sympathetic to them. Examples would also be from the Caucasus. Armenia, for example, was closely allied to Russia. And then after receiving no support from Russia, now is searching for new alliances abroad, especially towards the Americans and the West. So I think we'll not see so much direct and hard engagement of Russia on the continent as we have maybe seen before the start of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. But a lot of those hybrid warfare covered activities, trying to get manpower, trying to get access to resources with cooperation on security topics with governments that are sympathetic to to Moscow.
How do you think, how has African countries, because in nearly 36 African countries, they've had recruits from, how have the governments in those countries responded to this?
I think differently. In Kenya, there has been this report from the intelligence services reported, presented in parliament. There are attempts to get those people back to Kenya safely and alive. Same in South Africa, trying to get their people back to their country. And both are aligned a bit differently, I would say, right? One is leaning more towards the east, Russia. One is more leaning towards the west, or more neutral. But still both try to get their citizens back out of this war. In other countries, we don't see that. We know that there are fighters from countries like Togo, for example, and other countries also involved in the conflict, but we don't see a diplomatic push to get those people back. I think it's a non-unified approach, but I think if, for most countries on the continent, if they want to get their people back, there are avenues to do that. And that has been proven by other countries around the globe. India, for example, as well, who is also close to Russia, was also able to get some of their people back to their country after they have been drafted in Russia to fight for the war. So I think it's possible. But it varies, and many countries don't see any big incentives to get those people back. That is quite unfortunate, and it portrays again how doomed the situation is for someone who signs a contract that they don't understand, end up on a front line in a foreign war, invading a country of people that just defend themselves, and then who's going to help you? Your government, if you're lucky, you have a government like maybe in Kenya or in South Africa or in India who actually try to get you back, who actually care about you. But for many other people, that is not the reality. Their families maybe don't have the networks and the capacity to help them. The embassies and the governments in their home country are not interested in it. And maybe they don't even have any contact anymore to their family members.
We've heard, for those from the stories coming out, we've heard lack of adequate training for some of these African fighters. We've heard issues of discrimination, racism, and lack of equipment, and also just becoming like a human bomb, like time suicide bomb, to wear suicide bombs. How true are these stories?
Well, I think from the beginning of the war, we have seen such tactics being employed by the Russian military. And if you look back in time, you've seen those kind of tactics being employed in many of Russia's conflicts, be that in the Second World War, be that in the conflicts in Chechnya, for example. I think there is a general attitude of a disregard for human life in the Russian military. It doesn't count a lot. Even the life of the fellow Russian citizens don't count a lot. We have seen the methods that were used to deploy those prisoner fighters that Russia had been recruiting from their own prisons across the country. And now we see that with foreign fighters as well. You can see the videos. Many, of course, it's difficult to validate if everything on that is correct. It's of course also difficult to validate if a prisoner of war who sits in a Ukrainian prison is telling absolutely the truth, and that there is no push towards saying certain things and don't saying other things. But what we can see is from people who actually return to their home country that they confirm all of those reports. So I think we are in a position where we can say most of it is likely true. And those Russian war crimes towards Ukrainians are also well documented. Those are things that are just giving us the general context and the setting in which it's difficult to doubt that there is no that there is racism, that there is sending those people are sent without training in suicide attacks into the meat grinder, just as disposable humans to capture position and advance Russia's invasion of Ukraine another 2 or 3 meters towards Kiev. So yeah, it's a very bleak situation, and I think it's extensively documented.
You mentioned wars in the past. You mentioned the Russia and Chechen war, but again, we've also seen, especially World War II, or even World War I, we've seen where the African fighters, African soldiers, were involved in the war, very instrumental to the Allied forces of victory. And we've seen, how does this compare to that era, to that time? And also, I was going to ask, the African fighters of those times were not, I don't know, how were they recognized, the role that they played in that time? So how would you compare this? Because I think these were like soldiers, African soldiers that were going fighting on the side of the former European colonial masters at a former level. How does that compare to this?
Well, I'm not an expert on the involvement of from then that time colonial soldiers in the armies of France or Britain. I'm not sure that in the Russian army or in the Soviet army there were any. I don't know about that. But certainly one of the differences I would see now is that these people who are sent there to the front lines right now, those are not soldiers, right? They are recruited through economic incentives, through coercion, giving minimal training, basic equipment, and then they are sent to die there. And that is the purpose. In no prisoner exchange, Russia has ever said that they want any of those people back who have been taken prisoner by Ukraine. They are worth not a lot or nothing at all to the Russian military and just used as cannon fodder. Now, on the other side, I think the contributions of people from the former colonies of Britain and France, I think there have not been a lot of recognition of the contribution of those people in the Second World War and the First World War. But it's being discussed, and those people generally, as far as I'm aware, and I invite everyone to correct me if I'm wrong on that, they were part of their armies, their standing armies, right? They were soldiers by profession. So I think there is some sort of a difference, but let me say again, I'm not an expert on that, the history there, so take it with a grain of salt from me.
Yeah, I agree with, and I agree with the differences or the similarities that you've pointed out. I don't think that is something that's debatable. But you mentioned something earlier on. You mentioned the lack of opportunities in Africa. And Africa has the youngest youth population, it's a teeming youth population. But this population, which can be seen as a prospect, is unfortunately weaponized and used, in this case, to fight a foreign war. So how much role do you think, I know you mentioned that, but if you can expand on it, do you think the economic situations in many of these countries in Africa for the youth in terms of social mobility, in terms of economic opportunity, how much do you think that is contributing to the situation? Do you think if there was a better economic opportunity, if there was a better social welfare and all of that, that it would have been difficult to lure these people? Do you agree?
Definitely, I would agree. If you see no opportunity for yourself and you see no way to finance your family, maybe your family member, someone is sick, or your daughter wants to become a doctor or something like that, and you don't have any means to raise money for that, you don't see any other way, and no other opportunity presents itself, or all the opportunities that might be there are closed to you, are not achievable for you, are denied to you, I think that that sets the ground for a situation like now, where certain networks operating could achieve what they are achieving now, luring you into Russia on false pretense of a job, of education, of employment, of a passport, of high salaries, even bonuses for signing up, but murky circumstances, what exactly you are doing. And then you take the risk, you take the shot and you go. And suddenly you are presented with a contract that you cannot read. And a few days later, you are in a training camp, training to go to war. I think if you have a better opportunity, and I said earlier also, most people know that they will be employed in some sort of security context. They just don't know that it will be frontline duty in the infantry with high casualty rates. They know they are drafted maybe, or they are recruited to do some security work somewhere in Russia, in some of the cities, protecting supermarkets, government facilities or something like that. Something that seems to be safe enough to do with a high salary, no other opportunity in sight, so they take it. But in the end, it's all a lie, of course, and they end up in the front lines. Now, if you could choose, and I think most people would agree, if you could choose between a scholarship in the UK maybe and a scholarship in Russia, or a job as a driver or a security contractor in Russia, most people probably would go to the UK. Most people probably would go to Europe, to China, to America, to see the opportunities there. Because by now, I think most people know that between Russia and Ukraine, there's something happening, and the whole story is difficult, and there's not a lot of information that those recruiters give you before you sign up, before you before you land in Russia. On the other side, there are many informations and very transparent things you can find out with the internet about all those other programs around the world. But the problem really is for those people, many of those things are not realistic. And I know that myself, working in Kenya, when we have people going to Germany just for a delegation for a study trip or something, it's difficult to get the visas. It's difficult to do all those bureaucratic hurdles. And it's not an easy thing to achieve. And there are very limited opportunities only to do that. Now, on the other side, there may be some distant relative, some friend, some recruiting agent telling you, oh, it's very simple, it's very, very easy, you even get a lot of money, just pay us a little, and then we facilitate everything for you. You just need a scan of your passport, and then you get a plane ticket. And then that's fixed, you know? So this is a much more low-hanging fruit. And I think if you are economically desperate enough, that might be an opportunity you see for yourself.
So we saw, we've seen, especially in the Francophone African countries, we see a wave of anti-French or anti-France sentiments, and that swept through Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, and other places. But then again, we also saw where people were flying Russian flags, and you know, it more kind of like pro-Russia. Sentiment. So in the light of this, do you think this is going to shift the African-Russia relationship? Is there a shift now? Are people beginning to, is there a dent in that kind of a relationship?
Well, I think there is in some cases. Also in the Sahel region, you see increasingly people speaking out against the involvement of Russia there in the region, saying that it's not what was promised to be or what they thought it would be. They are there for extractive reasons and for shady deals with military dictatorships to gain a foothold there. They will not fix your problems in your countries. They will not respect your rights in your countries. There are many reports of human rights violations by this Wagner group in the Sahel region. So I think, yes, this recruitment into the war in Ukraine is just another of those points of discussion of those things happening around the world that will be seen on the continent, in the world, and that will further dismantle the idea that Russia is a neutral actor in a multipolar order that respects other countries, respects other people's decisions, sovereignty, freedom. Because at its core, Russia is an imperialist nation. They have colonized themselves, even maybe not in Africa, but in Central and East Asia. And they have never departed from that. They are still an imperialist nation. And I think it's just showing how they see other humans and even their own citizens that cannot be a real partner. And I think more and more people on the continent will realize that as the war continues and as we most likely in the next month, hopefully not, but maybe here see more and more recruitment by the Russians on the continent. More and more people will manage to survive. More and more will come home. More and more reports will be published about their situation and their treatment. And then I can only hope that more and more people understand that this is not an opportunity for them to improve their life, but it is most likely a death sentence.
Let's speak about that. There's a hint also in your answer that there might be some level of agency, that some of these people in there might have an idea of what it is they want to do there. They might not necessarily have the full scale. So have we seen some that have that agency? I want you to speak to that agency, even if it's limited. Are there some that are going in as missionaries? Are there some that's going, you know, with some greater sense of what they're going to do? You know, it has, or are they just largely caught up in that web of economy, that fraudulent, you know, economic incentive? Or, you know, what is it? You know, do we have some, even if it's limited, you know, number of people that are going in there as missionaries, knowing exactly what they're going to do? Because I've seen video of someone gloating about the life they're living in there, and you know what they're enjoying. So, are these pure mere propaganda, or are they real? Are they genuine?
Well, I'm sure there are many who profit from that. Definitely, first recruiters on the continent, right? Not all of them are Russians or other nationals. Many are also citizens of the countries they are operating in. So they profit. Of course, they have an interest in that, and they are complicit in those schemes. But then there are also, like you mentioned, some people bloating about how much salaries they get and how nice it is there in Russia, how many opportunities there are. They are also complicit in it. And I'm sure they are there, not all, maybe some might be pressured into saying those things, but I'm sure there are also some where it's authentic. And they are tools for propaganda by the Russians. There's no doubt about that. Besides that, there are also people who go there to fight, who are mercenaries. Of course, it's not all people being coerced and lied to, and not all of them. And I think quite a number of them know that the situation they are getting into might not be so clear and so safe and so straightforward as they are led to believe. The problem then is questioning that and having opportunity to say, okay, now I'm bailing out of that. It's not really what I'm looking for. But then again, the economic incentives and the economic situation is a big part. And you have many different people ending up there with many different avenues. You have students whose visa is expiring, who are then collected and set the contract in front of them, and then they are forced to sign it, because if they don't sign it, they will be kept in police custody and deported from the country. But they want to finish their studies in Russia, so they are signing. Same with workers who might be there legally and then commit some small offense, or maybe some made up offense. People who are there illegally, of course, are the most exposed. And many of those people, they don't know anything. They get the contract. They cannot read the Russian language in many cases, and they are forced to sign. But there are also those ones who are directly recruited here, on the continent, often under false pretenses, but often also under the assumption that they would be some security worker working in Russia. But then I think you need to also ask yourself, is that really what I'm going to do? They are fighting a war right now. Maybe you look into the news, even of your country. In many countries across Africa, you can find those kind of news reports. And then you need to ask yourself, is that really the full story?
Before I come to the last question, let me also make another important comparison. Let me compare it to the general migration, the migration issue, legal migration, forced migration in Europe, for instance, following the crisis in 2015. And then we've seen the boat crisis in the UK between France and stuff. And I think in Germany as well, Germany had a much more liberal approach to the migration issue. It's tightening up now in terms of illegal migration. So if we're looking at all of that migration from Africa, let's focus on Africa and looking at this luring stuff. I think like generally, also America, Trump's America, with the wall and the border and all of that stuff. How do we tie this within the broader issue of migration crisis? Even ability to be able to lure people with that, and how does it tie into migration crisis? I don't know if that question really makes sense. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, a lot of people that go on that boat to come to Europe are people that seems to be escaping poverty, trying to get economic opportunity. So it seems the same thing, but in this case, is they're being lured with opportunities. But it's still the same thing. People that go on the boat think they're going to get economic opportunities, but that is not the reality on the ground. How does this compare to that?
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer. It's it seems to be a lack of information, a lack of access to information, and then a lack of understanding what are the implications of those informations. Because I assume most people would not sign a contract to fight in the Russian army if they know what that would entail. Then more than half of them will be killed, maimed, crippled, and never be able to come home or even be buried anywhere. So I don't think many people would sign that. Looking at illegal migration to Europe, I think also if many people would know what the whole package would entail, they would also be cautious about that. Of course, you have the whole social welfare system in many European countries, so you will get along. But it's not like you are coming to Europe and suddenly you find a well-paying job, super good education, and you have that social mobility and can provide for your family. It's not reality. In most cases, you are then here as an asylum seeker. You receive minimal benefits so that you can finance your food and a place to stay. But this is not. This is not making your life that much better. And I think it's a lack of information. It's also interest of countries like Russia, right? They deal in instability, in crisis. They work together with military dictatorships. They import people, they fly people from Africa to Belarus to cross the border to Poland illegally, or try to cross the border to Poland illegally, to increase the pressure of this immigration crisis in Europe and push the governments there more far right and destabilize them. So they don't have any interest in a stable continent of Africa. They don't have any interest in a stable continent of Europe. If you see that, I think it matches together quite well. Wagner operating in the Sahel region, committing human rights violations there, Russia supporting not legitimized regimes that are maybe in the moment they overthrow a democratic elected government, maybe people cheer on the streets, but shortly after they notice, okay, this is not that much better, they're actually not solving the problems, they're actually just causing more of them. That is really, I think, Russia's game there.
Let me ask the last question. What do you think would be the short, medium, long-term solution? So we've seen individual governments, but should there be a collective response from, let's say, the African Union? How do you think the governments in Africa can stem such deceitful or even stem those kind of migration? What can be done from what perspective? Is it going to be from an economic perspective? What should be done?
I think information, to inform citizens of your country about what happens if you sign such contracts, if you engage in that kind of activity there, that can help a lot educating people, right? If that information is readily and easily available in your own language, maybe in your own tribal language, not only in English, French, and Portuguese or something, but in your own language as well, dispersing that as much as possible in the countries. Economic incentives, I think it's difficult because neither can Kenya, for example, just produce 1 million new jobs every year because they decided to do so. Nor could in Europe or in Canada someone say, okay, we have now 500,000 jobs for people from sub-Saharan Africa, just come here. It's not realistic. We both know that this, you cannot really solve that with a signing a new policy or speech at the AU or something. But from politics, I think what can also be done is what we have seen is that many governments can be successful getting their citizens back from Russia or from them being deployed in Ukraine if they demand that of Russia. I don't think Russia is in a very strong diplomatic position right now to refuse a lot of that. So if there is enough pressure and willingness in each country's own government to do that, I think that can be a route. Additionally, trying to prevent people from departing to Russia. So at least making it more difficult for those recruiting networks to logistically arrange someone getting on a plane to Moscow or somewhere in Russia. So at least they need to reroute those people. Maybe they fly to Qatar first, maybe they fly to some sympathetic country in Africa first before they fly to Russia. But being really critical of why someone would leave their home country and go to Russia. I think that can be an avenue. And then what you say, a unified response from the AU, I think, of course, would be good, because if all African countries push for an end of those practices or limiting those practices, condemnation of those practices of recruiting African fighters to fight in Ukraine, I think that could help. And that we see different countries with different perceived alignments, South Africa, Kenya, both do that, gives some hope that a larger alliance of countries on the continent could come together on that. But if you can get all, I would be dubious about that, doubtful about that, but maybe an alliance could form there to push back against those practices.
John? Thank you very much for this rich and insightful perspective and insight into this issue. I really, really enjoyed the conversation, and I look forward to maybe hopefully bringing you back. We don't know how, again, when we see the full scale of this, because this might be the tip of the iceberg. We don't know the full scale of the ball. Thank you very much for giving us your time, and I wish you many more vacations, you deserve it. I'll see you. Enjoy the rest of your day, John.
Thank you very much, Michael. Was nice to be here and talk about that. I think there's a lot more to be said, and as you mentioned, this, I'm sure this is just the tip of the iceberg. We'll hear and see a lot more in the coming months about this. And unfortunately, I don't think this whole conflict will end soon. Even the most powerful man in the White House Mr. Donald Trump promising
24-hour solution.
It's a year now. He has not brought a solution. And obviously the Russian side is not interested in a diplomatic solution.
This will
continue for some time. Unfortunately, the demand of the Russian side for more manpower will be higher and higher. There has to be some response from the continent. I'm very hopeful that hopefully will happen. But until then, we are left to see what else is being uncovered in the meantime.
Thank you very much and have a great day. Thanks, John.
Thank you also. Have a great day.
Brilliant. Thank you for tuning in today to this wonderful episode with Jan Ovoy. For now, stay blessed and join us usually. Thank our guests. And I'll see you next week.